Going In Raw is now a CastBox original. CastBox is the fastest growing, highest rated podcast app on both iOS and Android, where you can find all your favorite podcasts. You can still listen to Going In Raw wherever you get your podcasts, but we hope you'll give CastBox a shot. We think it's the best.
Hey, Brando, Steve here.
And Larson.
And welcome back to Matt Chat, the Hot Topic Debate Show here at youtube.com/ Steve and Larson. Hot topics in the world of wrestling, that
yeah.
is. Larson, of course, we accept these debate topics from our $20 and up patrons who then have, they can get their video questions up here on the Matt Chat.
Correct.
Or they can just send it. Do we have any text questions this week?
One.
Ooh, okay. Right on. Anyways, it's a lot of fun. So if you guys want, you can get on the patreon.com/ Steve and Larson. Kick in your $20 pledge, and you too can have your video put on the Matt Chat.
Correct.
Program. We have a bunch of great questions.
We do.
Today, of course, we're coming off the heels of the greatest, longest, largest Royal Rumble. Boy, that was a lot of fun. We're filming this on the Wednesday prior to it.
Yeah, we haven't watched it yet. It hasn't happened
I'm
yet.
Assuming it was a lot of fun. Maybe, I don't know, maybe we had like some violent falling out during the live stream.
Oh, I mean, you and I?
Yeah, 6 hours is a lot of time to
Well, we'll be here for five. We're not doing the kickoff
hanging
show.
Out together. Yeah, but we have to do the recap. It's already starting. Anyways, we got a bunch of great questions. We're going to kick one off from
Christian,
at last, you're at TakeOver. Let's see what he has to say.
See what he has to say.
Hey, friendos. It is the Hall of Famer Christian here, the Matt Chat question. I'm here at the end of TakeOver. I'm speechless. My question to you guys is, what is the greatest NXT TakeOver of all time? New Orleans is my answer. Thank you.
Thank you, Christian.
Wow. He seemed moved.
Yeah.
Moved
well, I mean,
by TakeOver NOLA.
It was a great show.
No, it was a fantastic show. It was the best TakeOver show. He went to the best TakeOver show. He wants an answer to the question, what is the best TakeOver? It was New Orleans. You cannot get a better card. Another five-star match, as rated by the Wrestling Observer himself, Dave Meltzer. Johnny Gargano versus Tommaso Ciampa. In that hold harmless agreement. Look, man, what other takeovers had a hold harmless agreement signing? None.
Yeah.
That ladder match for the NXT North American, groundbreaking North American
Good stuff.
Championship
Good stuff.
Was absolutely fantastic. NXT has never been more stacked top to bottom. You cannot name a better takeover than this one.
NXT takeover. War Games.
War Games?
War Games. I don't know if it's better than New Orleans, but it's on par. It's close. It's in the ballpark. Let's go through the card a little bit. First match, Lars Sullivan versus Cassius Ohno. This was kind of a squash match. It was to get Lars over. Second match, one of our favorite matches of 2017.
No, that's true.
Aleister Black versus
yeah.
Velveteen Dream. Stellar
Ooh,
match.
Boy.
Great storytelling.
Yeah.
Fantastic feud.
Yeah.
Great blow-off match for their feud. Next, Ember Moon finally winning the NXT Women's Championship, taking on Kairi Sane, Nikki Cross, and Peyton Royce. The match ended with a double eclipse on Nikki Cross and Peyton Royce.
Yeah.
Fantastic spot. Great to see Ember Moon finally get that NXT Women's title. Asuka comes to the ring. Presents Ember Moon with the belt. They embrace. Great moment. Next, Andrade Cien Almas, in shocking fashion, defeated
yeah.
Drew McIntyre.
It's a good match.
For the NXT Championship.
Yes.
Really good match. The finish, a bit surprising. We weren't expecting Almas to claim the title exactly, because it seemed like he just turned the corner storyline-wise just a matter of months ago. But it was great to see Almas claim that belt. He's gone on to put on some stellar matches since then. This match itself, very good. And finally, the War Games match,
mm-hmm.
which saw the Undisputed Era take on the Authors of Pain with Roderick Strong and Sanity. Incredible spot fest. Suplexes off the top
oh,
of the cage.
So much fun.
Authors of Pain just throwing people from one ring to another. That match and the Aleister Black versus Velveteen Dream match, I believe, both made our list of favorite matches of 2017. I won't say it's necessarily better than New Orleans, but it's close. It's on par. It's in the conversation.
Yeah, plus you also have Pete Dunne, Johnny Gargano on that one.
Yeah, that aired
later. But still, if you were there live, you could have been seeing that. Yeah.
And I remember the Ruby Riott, Sonya Deville match being pretty decent.
Yeah, that was okay.
That was taped there, too.
I was disappointed during that one. I remember being disappointed that they didn't give Nikki Cross that title.
Yeah.
That'd have been cool. And then also on the New Orleans, we had Ember Moon versus Shayna Baszler. Mm-hmm. Title change there. That was fantastic. Mm-hmm. So, look, man, you can't really go wrong with either of those answers. War Games was probably the most fun match up until that ladder match. That ladder match was so damn fun.
Oh, yeah.
Of course, in War Games, we also got to see the Ninja Turtle Authors of Pain.
True.
And little author of pain, Roderick Strong.
Yeah.
That was cool.
There's that great moment when Adam Cole is sitting on the ring post and everybody else is laid out.
Yeah.
He's sitting there surveying the damage. Yeah. He climbs the top of the cage later on. About to do Adam Cole Bebe. Takes that suplex off it, courtesy of Roderick Strong.
Woo,
that was great stuff.
Too much.
Great stuff.
Oh, by the way, did you notice, not to get completely off topic, but somebody tweeted at us that I guess Ember Moon, while Athena, did in fact pull off an eclipse off the ladder.
I saw that.
I need to watch that match.
In CZW, I believe.
Yeah. Anyways, good question, Christian. And,
yes.
Man, looks like he was really overwhelmed with emotion.
Yeah.
And not surprising, because that was fantastic.
It was a really captivating show, yeah.
The few takeovers we've been to have been, they're so much fun live. Mm-hmm.
Which of the two takeovers we've been to, which one's your favorite? Orlando or Brooklyn? Orlando, the main event, was Nakamura's last NXT match.
Oh, yeah, I know. It would have been Orlando. We had amazing seats.
Mm-hmm.
We had some beers bought for us by Wale.
Mm-hmm.
That was, I mean...
Yeah, it was a pretty cool experience.
I mean, Orlando was cool, because we were there, we were in the crowd, it was a big Nakamura crowd.
Brooklyn.
Yeah.
The coolest thing of the Brooklyn show was leaving the venue and walking through the concourse and everybody, and I mean everybody, seeing in Nakamura's theme.
Yeah, but come on, man. Or give me a break. Orlando, we were second row.
Second row, yeah.
We were like right behind where like the family members would sit, so mm-hmm. we could just like Candace was there mm-hmm. and Nakamura's family was mm-hmm. there. That was cool.
That was really neat.
Yeah. Anyways, let's see here. Ah, here we go. The backup conversationalist. There's the Bada. Let's see what he has to say.
Hey, guys. So with all the talk of Fox potentially buying the rights to the WWE, a lot of people are hoping that that does happen so that Raw can go down to 2 hours and have better creative overall. However, I'm a bit wary on that because a lot of guys wouldn't get time on TV. Like, I don't think Elias would have been getting as much TV time as he gets now if Raw was just 2 hours instead of 3 hours. So my question is this. With all of the talent that's coming into the WWE in the last few years, which would you rather have? Would you rather have both Raw and SmackDown be 2 hours long, or both Raw and SmackDown be 3 hours long? So that's 2 2-hour shows or 2 3-hour shows? Thanks, guys.
Thank you, Thera Thabata.
Do you want to attempt to explain why?
Heck yeah, man. Here's the thing. It might not be a matter of want. It might be a matter of necessity at a point where both shows must be 3 hours. Think of the depth of talent that's already on Raw and SmackDown. They don't have time for everybody as it is now. Andrade, Cien Almas, and Sanity are, at least on paper, members of SmackDown. Haven't seen them yet. There's no time for them right now. We need more time. For all the talents that are going to be on the main roster within the next couple of years, we need more time. Raw right now, the creative hasn't been the best since Mania. Leading up to Mania, though, it was pretty darn good.
Yeah, it's been okay. It's been all right.
SmackDown, they just seemingly got their groove back. And with the additions of Almas and Sanity to the show, we haven't even seen them yet. Plus all the other additions that we have seen, I feel like they could use another hour. And a year from now, with Adam Cole, Aleister Black, Ricochet, Velveteen Dream are all on their way to the main roster. TM61, Redragon, when they're all on their way to the main roster, you're going to need more time. You have to have more time to give all these talents an opportunity. Otherwise, you're going to be a situation like Authors of Pain where they have two kind of middle-of-the-road matches and they're not on TV this week. Yeah. They weren't on TV. You need more time. Plus, an extra hour of TV for SmackDown, more ad revenue, more money. It could open up more creative avenues, let matches breathe a bit more. I'm all on board giving SmackDown 3 hours. More opportunities for the talents. Make it happen, Steve.
I think one of the arguments that could be made for making it SmackDown 3 hours is to make it feel like it's on par
with Raw in terms of prestige.
Yeah.
that it's not the B show because it's an hour shorter.
That being said, SmackDown, especially since Mania and prior to SummerSlam last year, demonstrated that more does not equal better. They were
wait. But that's what Triple H says. No, he says more but better.
He said Triple H thinks more but better.
But not more is better. Okay.
Exactly.
Carry on.
So with that 2 hour time, look, my favorite hour of WWE TV right now is NXT. That's one lean hour. My next favorite thing right now at this moment, thanks to the shakeup and Nakamura's heel turn, is SmackDown. And they are able to jam a lot of great stuff. There was nothing. There was no filler this past week on SmackDown. There was nothing that we sat there and said, oh, they could have. They didn't need that. They don't need this. I take your point with the level of talent, the amount of talent, the quantity of talent that's coming in and the quality of talent. However, if they continue down this path of factioning up people, the Undisputed Era, you mentioned Sanity, they can start building stories that involve more people with less amount of time. Mm. So Reed Dragon doesn't need their own story because they're a group with Adam Cole's story and vice versa. And so they can play around with that. Granted, I'm not sure what kind of legs that might have going forward. And obviously it feels like there would, you know, there'd have to be some give somewhere. Maybe they wouldn't be able to, you know, feature all the UK talent. I don't know. They'd have to be more selective with who they call up. Maybe add another hour to NXT to make all three brands 2 hours, although Triple H seems to be against that right now, although he was against intergender wrestling only like a year ago or less than that. And look at, you know, we're not exactly there, but we saw some of that during WrestleMania. So I don't know. I think creatively speaking, Raw was never better than when it was 2 hours long. SmackDown, when it's at its best, is better than Raw at 2 hours. Raw to this day, even when Raw is firing on all cylinders, there are still moments when you look at it and say, well, we could have really done without this. We could have really done without that. When I used to watch Raw in the Hulu form, it flowed better. It was, you know, it's just tighter programming. There's so much WWE programming that they expect us to watch, or that is out there for us to watch.
Well, we have to watch
it. We have to watch it. That I feel like, you know, I don't know, if you look to the proof and the pudding with which it lies. The proof's in the pudding. Two-hour SmackDown is better than a three-hour Raw.
I will counter partially with this, as we saw with the episode of Raw, which featured that gauntlet match. I mean, as awesome as that would have been to fill an entire episode of Raw or SmackDown with one match, two-hour-long match, if they had done that, then the rest of the roster had nothing to do for that episode. So it was great they had that extra third hour to give other segments, other talents, some opportunities to advance their own storylines. If it was 2 hours, they might have made that gauntlet match just a single hour, and then Seth wouldn't have had that awesome run of wrestling for an hour straight.
Yeah, but that's a one single.
That's an isolated incident.
If you look back,
if it were a 2 hour show, it wouldn't have happened.
If you look back,
and that's one of the highlights of Raw.
I can give you another isolated incident similar to that within the 2 hour time frame, and that's when John Cena and Triple H and HBK went an hour on that Raw that was in England, I think.
Yeah,
and you know they went an hour. They still had another hour to pack a bunch of absolute crap.
Yeah.
Sure crap in
that
episode.
Well, that's more based on the talent available.
Yeah, it was like Shane versus Umaga or something.
But you look
weird
back
like
at
that,
the breakdowns of Raw's, like during the Attitude Era especially, it's rare that matches go longer than 10 minutes.
Well, and I would be okay with going back to that time and have pay-per-views with, 20-minute matches, 25-minute matches, which totally would work now that brands are just being mashed up into pay-per-views.
Well, I even feel like that gives matches less opportunity to breathe.
I know, that's why I was...
You were
sarcasm right there.
Sarcastic. Yeah,
yeah,
you were But I was no-selling it.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, all right.
Kind of what you do. Next.
From Vinny Elliott.
Oh, not just Vinny Elliott.
The Friendoverse.
The reigning...
Wait, whoa. Champion.
No, maybe not anymore, maybe.
Oh, yeah. That's true.
Yeah. Could be... The first, the
As
inaugural,
of now.
The very first Friendoverse Openweight Champion, Vinny Elliott. Let's see what he has to say.
Hey, Friendos. King of Beard Style, Vinny Elliott here. And your very first ever Going in Raw Friendoverse Openweight Champion. And my Matt Chat question is, who would have had the better overall career? Owen Hart, if he didn't pass away? or Bret Hart if he didn't get concussed by Bill Goldberg? In my opinion, it might be Owen Hart. Steve, I know you're a huge Bret Hart fan. So you pick Bret Hart, and Larson, you pick Owen Hart. Thank you guys. Too sweet. Hearty handshake. You guys are doing a great job. Thank you guys for all your hard work. I'll talk to y'all later. Peace.
Thank you, Vinny.
Thank you, champ.
You go first.
I don't really know how you can argue this one is Bret Hart. I mean, there's really no argument to be made here. Even if Owen had survived or hadn't gone through the tragedy of dying in the middle of the ring there, was it No Way Out? No Mercy? Which one was it?
It was No Way Out.
No Way Out, yeah. In terms of the prestige of his career, and by no means am I mean, he easily would have been a Hall of Famer. Bret Hart already had so many accolades to his name. He had already done so much that if you take the date of Owen's death and you go from there and say Owen hadn't died, I don't see a conceivable way, even Bret having to retire a year or two later, that Owen could have caught up with Bret and what he had done. Owen had already been around for quite a while. He was probably, what, mid-30s when he died? 33, 34, something like that? 34. And so he might have had, and granted, I think Owen could have gone a long time. He seemed well-conditioned. But in terms of relevancy, he was already on the wane. So I don't, and on top of that, you know, sure, maybe if he went over to WCW, he could have been the recipient of the world title with all the hot potatoing they did with that title. But, you know, as we saw, Bret Hart as WWF champion, much more prestigious, much more well-known than Bret Hart ever was as WCW champion, because we're talking about the same era that, you know, Vince Russo was champion and David Arquette was champion and Jeff Jarrett was champion. And so I'm not really sure. And if you want to consider this, Owen Hart in the end might have been considered, had he, you know, lived, he might have had the rest of his career to prove that he was the fan favorite between the two of them. But in terms of accolades, the kind of stuff that people remembered for in wrestling, Bret Hart is kind of an all-timer. Like, you know, I don't know what the actual numbers would be, but between his Intercontinental tag title and, of course, world title and all the classic matches he had, you know, it's hard to argue that Bret wouldn't have, in the end, still been known as the all-timer that he was, that
yeah.
He is.
Bret Hart first won the WWF title at the age of 35, which was older than Owen was when he unfortunately passed away. So Owen conceivably had a whole other phase of his career in front of him. He was a more exciting wrestler than Bret Hart. He was more dynamic. He was a former IWGP Junior Heavyweight Championship. And thanks to Twitter account Larry Otto, get to see all the pretty awesome stuff he did in New Japan. Mm-hmm. We only saw a fraction of that in WWF. Owen also had a more engaging personality. He was funny. Bret isn't really that funny.
No, he's not.
And I think during the Attitude Era especially, we saw a little bit of that when Owen was doing the I Am Not a Nugget stuff. He was funny. He was genuinely funny. Had he not gotten saddled with that blue blazer gimmick again, if they had gone a different creative direction, there's a possibility that he could have parlayed his personality into greater success. He had a lot of career ahead of him. It's hard to argue that, you know, even if he hadn't tragically died, that Owen would have had a better career than Bret, because as you said, Bret, you know, even by 1998, had achieved all sorts of impressive accolades. He's a multi-time WWF champion, Intercontinental champion, so on and so forth. Owen, by that point, was already a two-time Intercontinental champion, multi-time tag champion.
What year did Bret first win the WWF title?
92.
He was 35 in 92?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Okay. He was born in 57, says here.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Like I said, it's hard to argue that Owen would have, but considering how young he was, what he had already accomplished up to that point, I don't think it's outside the realm of possibility that he could have himself won the WWF Championship at some point.
It was more interesting that he never won it after Mania, what was it, 10, that he beat Brett
early? Yeah, during the whole feud, they had that cage match, the previous SummerSlam, all that stuff, yeah.
Yeah, it is kind of curious, because here's the thing about
SummerSlam,
here's the thing about Owen, is that his character arc almost necessitated him winning the world title at some point. Mm-hmm. It's just he had...
I mean, from his brother, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So that is kind of interesting. There's one thing I definitely agree with you on, in that his personality, I'll put it this way. If wrestling accolades were based off of personality alone, his ceiling was way higher than Brett's.
Yep.
Because not only did he have the humor, which he did, and it was used to typical mid-card level in his last run in WWF. But when he showed the intensity that he would from time to time, mm-hmm, you know, especially mm-hmm. during the feud with Brett.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the Hart Foundation stuff later.
Oh, I love when the Hart Foundation used to carry his slammies with them all the time.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That was hilarious.
If they had utilized that to its fullest potential, he probably could have been up there with Brett.
Yeah.
I am curious. I'm legitimately curious to understand the thinking there that Vince had in terms of delineating the career paths of the brothers.
Yeah.
You know? That is kind of an interesting question. You know, not to say that Owen couldn't have been what Bret Hart was, but, you know, by the time he died, I mean, Grant, I understand what you're saying, but Bret Hart was on such a trajectory.
Oh, I know.
Going into his world title win. I'll never forget that day.
Yeah, I know.
Anyways, let's talk
next
to Patrick Sparks and let's see what he has to say.
Hey, friendos, Pat here. All right, so the greatest Royal Rumble was Friday. Hopefully, honestly, Roman has the title, so I can get Brock Lesnar off my TV screen because I'm sick of seeing him. But with the departure of Brock Lesnar means the possible departure of Paul Heyman. My debate for you is, would Paul Heyman leaving the WWE entirely, never to show up for like 5 years or something, would that be better for the company than possibly him sticking around and finding a managerial role for somebody else, or maybe doing a backstage role like writing for SmackDown like he did a long time ago and it was really good. But what do you guys think? Thanks, friendos.
Thank you, Patrick.
Thank you, Patrick Sparks.
Very I go
sad
first.
That he no longer does questions next to a giant hive of monster bees.
Well, we can hope. We can always hope that once again the bees will return.
Maybe the bees will return.
Maybe the bees will return. So, I can think one person that might benefit from Heyman leaving WWE, and that might be Paul Heyman.
Mm.
I know he has his marketing business. What's it called? Something Larry?
Looking for Larry?
Looking for Larry.
Something like that?
Something like that, yeah. And, you know, I know based on his current deal, his limited number of dates, he can already dedicate much of his time to that enterprise.
Sure.
But if he was unburdened by his WWE contract, potentially he could dedicate all his energy towards that. We've seen him manage other wrestlers other than Brock Lesnar in WWE, and it's the track record isn't the best.
No.
It seems that pairing of Heyman with Brock produces the most inspired work. Apart from Heyman's partnership with CM Punk, who, you know, you had two great mic guys to play off, none of the other pairings have really panned out. Him and Cesaro didn't work. Him and Curtis Axel didn't work. I know there's been talk of maybe pairing him up with Ronda Rousey. I don't think that's necessary, especially given what we've seen from Rousey.
If it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Exactly. And then you also run into the problem potentially of if they're going for that Mr. McMahon, Stone Cold formula with Stephanie and Ronda Rousey, putting Paul Heyman in that mix isn't going to work.
No.
He's an insanely creative guy, and he knows the business of wrestling just about as good as anybody. But I don't know if he would be really into going back into some sort of creative role, given how his departure from the company in, 2003, I think, went down. I don't know if that'd be something he'd be interested in. So maybe it just might be best for everybody involved now for Heyman to go concentrate on his own businesses. WWE, it seems like they're in a pretty decent groove right now on Raw and SmackDown, especially SmackDown, if they've kind of gotten their they got back to doing things how they were a year or so ago. Take a break in a couple of years, maybe 3, 4, 5 years, whether, well, I mean, if Brock comes back for the occasional match, I'm sure Heyman will be with him.
Sure, of course.
But I don't necessarily know if Heyman would be interested in sticking around in any sort of full-time capacity or even part-time capacity beyond his advocate role for Brock Lesnar. So I'll say maybe Heyman taking a leave of absence for WWE might be better for Paul Heyman.
Well, we can't really understand what their motivations are, what his motivation is, what his ambition is, what his time is like, if he'd be interested in doing it. All things being equal, if he was interested in hearing somebody out, I think, like you said, Paul Heyman knows the business, understands the business, and creatively understands the business better than anybody else, or at least on par with anybody else. I think if he was interested in it, I think it'd be a no-brainer for them to say, okay, Paul, well, you know, what would you be interested in doing if it's spearheading a TV 14 version of ECW like they teased us in that survey for the WWE Network? If it was being a hand in NXT, from what I understand, Paul Heyman makes himself available whenever he's there for tapings or a live show or whatever. He makes himself available to younger talent if they ever want to run questions by him or get advice from him. He always leaves himself open. I think that kind of presence would be invaluable to a place like NXT, again, if he was interested in it. If creatively he felt it was something that he was inspired by, then absolutely. But you're right. It all goes to, you know, what would he think is best for him? If it's something that he was interested in, then I would say that by all means, it's Paul Heyman. Absolutely. I just would not want to see him. I think the one thing that we can both agree on, I don't want to see him again. I don't want to see him in a managerial role. You're right. It kind of waters Paul Heyman down. We've seen even recently with Brock Lesnar, like, there's not a lot left.
Mm-hmm.
There's not a lot left for him to do with Brock Lesnar, mm-hmm. you know, even. And so even if Brock did come back, I'm sure Paul will be there with him because they have a relationship and that's what he does. Yeah. But, you know,
I felt like the last year, Heyman was kind of forced on his promos, kind of spin his wheels, kind of
find
new ways to say the same thing.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's never fun.
No.
But if he had a new challenge within the WWE, then absolutely, I'd say that'd be great. I'll put it this way. I wouldn't base, if I were the man making the decision, I wouldn't base that decision based on what we've seen from him over the past year, simply because I think he's probably had no choice but to try to come up with new ways to say the same exact thing.
Mm-hmm.
That's just what Brock and Roman has done.
Yep.
Next up, we've got a question from Ayo Worm.
Let's
see what he has to say.
Hey, what's good, everybody? It's your boy Ayo Worm here back with another Match Chat Debate. Steve Larson, my question is, what titles would you guys bring back to use as the current titles? For me, I would bring back the WCW Tag Team titles because they look the best to me out of every tag team titles, but what is your guys' opinions? All right, guys. I'll let you later.
Thank you, Ayo Worm.
Thank you very much. I will go first.
Yeah.
So you came up with your answer before I did, and I like that answer. You know, I'm going to change mine. I'm going to say, no, I can't do that. To replace a current title. I'm not huge on the WWE tag titles. I don't think they look that great. I really like the ones from, like, the 90s. I don't know when they became what they became, what they were before then, but, like, the ones that, you know, the New Age Outlaws held.
Yeah.
The Acolytes or the APA or whatever held them. Those ones. I like those ones. Do that.
This one, right?
There you go. That
one.
Yeah,
it says World on it.
Yeah. It says World on it. It
says World.
It's in neat letters, it looked like from the mid 80s or something. But, anyways, you got the better answer. It's the Winged Eagle one.
Oh, yeah. It's the Eagle with the wings. I don't know offhand what years it was active, but it was far and away, I feel like, the best-looking belt WWF has ever had, with the possible exception of the Intercontinental title.
Oh, yeah, that's a beautiful belt.
The one that has historically been the Intercontinental title, the general design that exists now and existed for a long time prior to that, and with, you know, they had some brief redesigns in between. But that Winged Eagle WWF title, thing of beauty.
I will say this. Number one, excuse me.
Sorry, have that belt replace the Universal title.
They should bring back the belt with literally Moolah's face on it.
No. Instead of having the eagle with the eagle with his wings spread, put some sort of like space dragon on there to signify the Universal aspect.
Oh, I like that. That's good. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, that's good. I do. You have to love the NXT North American Championship.
Oh, it's really good.
It looks like nothing else.
I mean,
the
United Kingdom title is beautiful too.
That's beautiful too. But even that is within the confines of the WWE.
The general design aesthetic of what's
that
going
North
on.
American title is like nothing.
It's
else.
It's a throwback,
and it's such a throwback.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, do that. Just like bring back the little tiny belt buckle.
Yeah,
one.
Like a belt buckle, exactly.
That'd
with with America on it.
Yeah, exactly. That'd be fantastic.
No, that's the Eagle one. That one is the best.
Let's see here. We've got Chase up next. Let's see Chase's question, please.
Hey, Steve. Hey, Larson. It's Chase here. Just dealing with the heat down a little more. It's not ready for it. Either way, what's your favorite feel-good moment in wrestling? For me, it's Mike Bennett, Mike Kanellis, how he became sober and overcame alcoholism. So yeah, just give you that quick question. And you cannot use Daniel Bryan because that is way too freaking obvious.
Thank you, Chase.
Too sweet, Chase.
You wouldn't have an answer here, so I'll go first. You got to think about that one.
Okay.
You've seen the redemption stories. We all have heard, see the redemption stories of Jake Roberts and Scott Hall.
Yes.
Courtesy of the Accountability Crib.
Yes.
Diamond Dallas Page, DDP Yoga, all that stuff. I don't know if any kind of instance crystallize how far Scott Hall has come, more so than listening to his two appearances on the Stone Cold podcast. The first one seemed like he was hardly with it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if he was under the influence of something or it was just, his usual state of being based on the lifestyle he was living at the time. But he seemed kind of like a bit of a mess.
He seemed out of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally.
Whereas the second appearance was honestly one of the best podcasts I've ever heard. He is lucid. He is articulate. He tells great stories.
Yeah.
He has a great sense of humor. It is one of the most entertaining hours or so of wrestling podcasting I have ever heard.
Yeah.
And hearing how far he has come, and granted, it sounds like he's had some hiccups along the way. How far Scott Hall has come. I was always a pretty huge Scott Hall fan in WCW. And even going back looking at his work at Razor Ramon, he was fantastic.
Yeah,
one of the most, I don't want to say underrated, but it's one of those guys when you think of the wrestlers who never won a world title. It's kind of a bummer.
He's way up there, yeah.
Yeah. So to see that he's gotten his life back together, it seems like, for the most part, is really heartwarming and it's great to see. And just listening to that podcast is thinking, man, this is awesome that this guy from how troubled his life was previous has gotten to this point and he's still here telling stories like this, like in the episode of Breaking Ground. He was sharing wisdom with the students at the Performance Center.
Mm-hmm.
It's great to see. So yeah. That's my answer.
Yeah. So you mentioned Jake Roberts. I'm going to say Jake Roberts going to the Hall of Fame. That's a huge one. Given that we saw in Beyond the Mat, and obviously a ton of other places, just how far he had fallen. Like, he was trying to get paid for wrestling shows with crack. And it is hugely surprising that he didn't die.
Mm-hmm.
The whole idea of the Accountability Crib, DDP, bringing in, older wrestlers and other people and shaping them up and basically giving them literally a new lease on life. Is, in my opinion, probably the most heartwarming story there is. That includes Scott Hall.
Mm-hmm.
But Jake Roberts seemed to be the one person who really sort of was prime example of how a guy can go from rock bottom to, heights. And it's not an easy path. A lot of bumps along the way. But the fact that he's, seemingly healthy, I don't know what kind of burns he suffered at the hands of Davey Boy Smith when he threw coffee on his face. But that aside, he seems to be doing okay. I'm not sure how long Killer Elite Squad had that coffee. I'm not sure how hot it was.
Yeah, I don't know either.
If he had just got it from McDonald's and it was still in its little cup, that's dangerous.
Yeah.
That's really dangerous. If he walked clear across the convention center and had poured it and it was already kind of on the wane, he might be
Depends
okay.
Depends, too, if it had a lid on it or not.
Yeah.
If it had the lid, it would have kept the heat in a bit longer.
Right, yeah.
The heat could have escaped much more quickly.
I hope that it was a little styrofoam cup.
Yeah.
And
a little one. So wasn't
a little one. And he was walking around.
No lid.
He was walking around with it for like a half hour looking at Jake Roberts.
And also he put some like cream in it. Not powdered creamer, but cold creamer.
Yeah.
So it was
some
hot.
Cold creamer. When did he? Oh God. What was the forethought there?
It seems like a pretty impulsive decision, Steve.
Okay, so do you think that the coffee was poured with the intention?
I would doubt it.
Really?
But I don't know.
You think it was? What time of the day was it?
I have no idea.
Was Davey Boy Smith Jr. just like rolling with, or was it? What is he? Is it? What's his real name?
Harry Smith.
Harry Smith Jr. No, just Harry Smith.
I think so.
And then he goes by Davey Boy Smith Jr. because his dad was okay. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if he poured it
with the intent of using it as like weaponized coffee.
Was it like Starbucks in the convention center, a kiosk?
Well, I mean, considering the prices that are charged for, you know, like Starbucks coffee, especially if you're at some sort of convention center, there's a markup there. You know, I'm sure he does pretty well for himself. Nonetheless, that's not the kind of coffee you want to use as some sort of, device or your tool to throw on somebody. Yeah. If there's like a little coffee machine, a vending machine, where it costs, you know, like 50 cents to get a small cup of coffee, that would make more sense financially.
Yeah, it was like a doo-doo-doo.
Yeah, sort of coffee robot situation. But if you're actually buying Starbucks, then that seems a little too hefty of a price to use.
And you're standing in a really long line.
Yeah, throw in someone's face.
Yeah, premeditation.
I mean, honestly, you probably shouldn't throw hot coffee in most people's faces anyways.
No, you shouldn't. There's like a couple people. I was also going to say another great feel-good moment, the Montreal Screwjob.
Let's move on.
Okay.
Let's move on to our next Matt Chatter here.
Ooh.
Matthew E. Williams, Esquire.
Our legal
see
eagle.
See what he has to say.
Your Western States Heritage Champion, Matthew E. Williams, Esquire, here with a controversial Matt Chat. Mr. Perfect would have been a better WWF champion than HBK. And I'm going to back it up and say HBK and Brett is inferior to Mr. Perfect versus Rick Rude over the same title. So, fellas, debate it. Better champ, HBK, or Mr. Perfect? Better feud, HBK and Brett, or Mr. Perfect and ravishing Rick Rude? See you next time, friendos.
Thank you, Matthew Williams, Esquire.
Thank you very much for that.
Controversial question.
Yeah.
He proposes the idea that Mr. Perfect could have been a better champion than Heartbreak Kid Shawn Michaels. Steve, you are charged with making that case, so please do so.
Okay. For those of you out there who feel Bret Hart was a better champion than Shawn Michaels, I pose to you, for those people, Mr. Perfect could have been. That would have been a toss-up. Okay, here's the thing. In my opinion, Mr. Perfect was as good a technical wrestler, as good as maybe even a better storyteller, as much the pro wrestler as Bret Hart ever was. I believe that. If you then add in what I believe is stronger levels of charisma, personality, a sense of humor, but also understanding where, you know, when to bring the drama, then I think Mr. Perfect could have been a champion that surpassed Bret Hart, and in which case you're diving into HBK territory. I personally think HBK, I much prefer him as an in-ring competitor and as a personality, even though he seemed to be, you know, kind of all over the map there for a while. But yeah, I think Mr. Perfect could have been a better champion than at least Bret Hart, and then you're getting into HBK territory. As much as I would love to try to argue that Rude versus Perfect was a better feud than HBK Bret Hart, there you can't. You can't. That shit was real. That was the realest shit ever. When HBK is calling out Bret Hart, accusing him in like the least hidden innuendo for like having relations with Sonny. Whoa! And Brett didn't know he was going to say that. That is messed up. They literally did an entire DVD about that feud and had, I couldn't watch it because I couldn't, because it was so awkward to me.
Oh, it was awkward, but it's fascinating stuff.
Oh, I couldn't watch it. Like that feud permanently scarred Bret Hart. permanently scarred him. You saw what happened after the Montreal screw job. Mm-hmm. You saw Bret Hart coming out like he didn't care about anything in the world. That shit was real.
Yep.
No, man. That's the feud in all of ever wrestling.
Yeah, it could be.
Dude, come on. That shit's like scary real. Sunny days. What the fuck he just say?
I mean, that's why Bret wanted to do the shoot foot break.
I know, exactly.
No, it's HBK across the board, man. He is HBK is generally regarded as one of the greatest, if not the greatest, in-ring competitors of all time.
Probably.
Say what you will about his attitude backstage. You can never argue with his effort in the ring. His first title reign as a face wasn't the best. It was a different era of wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. It was one of those situations that kind of felt like, and I've heard this analogy before, that the fans didn't embrace him because they felt like he was being shoved down their throats.
Yeah.
But that seems more from a character standpoint. Again, he's one of the best wrestlers ever.
Mm-hmm.
His list of classic matches goes on and on. Mm-hmm. Mr. Perfect is, again, one of the, if we could make a list of wrestlers who never won the WWF title, world title.
Oh, sure.
Mr. Perfect's top five on that, too.
Yeah.
As is Scott Hall.
Perfect, Hall, Rude, Piper.
Yeah.
And somebody else. I don't know.
Orndorff.
Orndorff, there you go.
But no, it's HBK. 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 His heel title reign was fantastic.
Oh, yeah, dude. And come on, DX, give me a break. That's awesome. It's fantastic stuff. So, yeah, HBK. One of HBK. My favorite ever.
Oh, might be my favorite ever.
It's like HBK and Flair, really. Everybody else is garbage.
Well, I wouldn't say that.
Garbage.
How many more years is it going to take before Okada's in that conversation?
Oh, Okada's number one right now.
All right, good.
I didn't know we were bringing literal gods into this conversation.
Well, it's all time. We're like an all-time greatest in-ring performer.
I didn't know gods were eligible for that. He's not just a performer. He's a deity. Minnesota Joe has Minnesota Joe has got a question for us. Hey.
Hey, friendos. Minnesota Joe here with another Matt Chat question. You betcha. I'm not going to do that accent. Okay, so as you can probably tell by my shirt, I'm a big fan of Bullet Club, especially Kenny Omega. And I hope that he comes to WWE like within the next couple of years. And when he comes, I have so many dream matches and rivals I want to see. But what are your guys' top Kenny Omega WWE dream matches? I'd say mine would probably be Xavier Woods for the control of up, up, down, down. But that's just my opinion. What's yours? Thanks, friendos. Too sweet and hearty handshake.
Thank you, Minnesota Joe.
Man, when am I getting my pro wrestling t-shirt? Shirts.
I don't know, man.
Shirts. Package.
I go first. When we were selecting our answers, I said to you, no former Bullet Club stuff. Too obvious.
No Adam Cole, no Finn Balor, no AJ Styles.
Exactly. Too obvious.
Because that's the answer.
Yeah. So instead, I'm going to go with Johnny Gargano, Johnny Wrestling. He's been involved in 2 5-star matches this year. Kenny Omega claims to be the best bout machine. Last year he put on 2 6-star matches and another match that was just below that, I think. The final Okada match was like 5 3/4-star. Mm-hmm. Whatever. So if you want to give me a match that's going to like break records for best match ever potentially,
yeah,
and it can't be against AJ Styles, give me this match against Johnny Wrestling.
Sound logic.
40 minutes on any pay-per-view.
Yeah.
Preferably a high-profile one. And we're talking 17 stars. Mm-hmm. We're talking tremendous wrestling action. Johnny Wrestling is maybe the best storyteller in WWE right now. Mm-hmm. In ring. If he's not the best, he's definitely up there.
Mm-hmm.
Kenny Omega, great wrestler, great storyteller. Both seem very adept at coming up and executing really creative spots.
True.
So that'd be the match I would really like to see. I think that match would be phenomenal.
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 Here's another match would be phenomenal. And this is more personality-based, perhaps.
Yeah.
But still, I think it'd be a fantastic strike fest. Give me Aleister Black. I think it'd be absolutely fantastic. Number one, they're both big fans of video games, similar to what Minnesota Joe said with Xavier Woods. I'd like to see Aleister Black versus Kenny Omega. I feel like stylistically their styles would be really interesting to see them match up in the ring. I think they could tell a really fascinating story both outside the ring and inside the ring, especially Kenny's sort of darker persona before he started this whole Golden Lovers thing back at last year's Wrestle Kingdom. that sort of era Kenny, I think, could be interesting to match up with Aleister Black. I don't know if they ever, they probably fought on the Independence Circuit at some
maybe,
point.
Yeah, I don't know.
Wouldn't surprise me.
I wouldn't be surprised if Kenny and Johnny Gargano.
That's a definite possibility, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, they're both PWG veterans, so it's entirely possible.
Yeah. So, yeah, good answers, everybody.
Yeah.
And who knows, we might get to see that.
Yeah, hopefully. Next from Adam Mayhem.
Oh, God.
I thought he was back in your good graces now.
Is he?
Yeah.
I never know. Day to day, I never know if I'm cool with him or not.
He made you laugh during the pre-show today.
Well, you know, what have you done for me lately? That was,
you're not banned, Adam.
It was like 3 days ago.
If he tries to put that sign up, I'm going to take it down and rip it up.
I don't know anything about a sign. I'm going
to
make
I know
a
you
sign
tried to make it before. Anyways, let's see what Adam Mayhem has to say.
Okay.
Buenas tardes, friendo universo. Bienvenidos to another edition of Chit Chat with the champ, Samoa Joe edition. All right, Stephen Larson, here's my question for debate this week. So, the superstar shakeup was last week. It's come and gone. Now, here's what I want you to debate. I want you to pick one, actually two people, one from each brand, that should switch. One from SmackDown to Raw and one from Raw to SmackDown. But here's the kicker. They have to keep the gimmick from the person that they're switching with. So let's say you're switching Jeff Hardy with Finn Balor. Then Finn Balor would have Jeff Hardy's gimmick. And Jeff Hardy would have Finn Balor's gimmick. Alright guys, have fun with it.
Thank you, Adam Mayhem.
Oh, is he done?
Yeah, you get to go first.
All right. Well, thank you for your question. Sometimes it feels like he's making it up as he goes along, though. I feel like he hits record and then he decides what his question's going to be. I love Adam Mayhem so much.
Oh,
he can come to his office whenever he wants.
Heck yes.
No, he's banned.
No.
Braun Strowman, Velveteen Dream.
All right.
Braun Strowman gets Velveteen Dream's gimmick.
And goes to NXT.
Velveteen Dream. He has to say, get these hands. Oh, that's a good one. I didn't even think about that part of it. I just want to see Braun Strowman acting all sensual and stuff. But seeing Velveteen Dream say, get these hands. That'd be great. I'd like to see that.
All right.
I'd like to see all that. I'm the experience. Oh, man.
No way. Give me Roman. Send him to NXT. And send Cassius Ohno to the main roster so Cassius Ohno can finally fulfill his destiny as member of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Okay.
And then we kind of get a variation, as seen in Stephen Larson book Raw, of Chill Roman.
Oh,
he's
yeah.
hanging out in basketball jerseys.
Yeah,
customized.
Yeah.
With Roman on it.
Yeah, that'd be good.
Maybe he can wear basketball shorts.
Yeah.
To the ring.
I like it.
I think it's a good deal for everybody involved.
I think it's
we
good,
get
too.
Chill Roman finally, which is what we really want.
Yeah.
And we get Cassius Ohno in his rightful spot in the Shield.
Okay. No, I think that's a really good one. I still like the idea of Braun being like a sexual beast. Freaking out of me, huh? That's a good question.
It is a good question.
All right, next up we've got Broken Steve.
Let's see what Broken Steve has to say.
Hey, Stephen Larson. Broken Steve here with another Matt Chat question. My question for you guys this week is, what do you think would have more impact if you could go back in time? The NWO going to WWE or DX going to WCW? Thanks, guys.
Thank you, Broken Steve.
Man, what a great question. You go first.
I do.
I get the right one in this one.
Well, I don't know about that. It depends on what era of NWO and DX we're talking about. If we're talking about like prime NWO, when it was Outsiders, Hogan, DiBiase, and Six.
That's your version of prime?
Well, that's before it really started to balloon out of control.
Pre-Big Show.
Oh, Big Show was there too.
Okay.
That was the Six. That was when, before it really got out of control.
I feel like it was already out of control at that point.
Kind of. But that's before it really got out of control.
Okay, right.
Pretty
sold out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That version of NWO, and depends if we're talking HBK, Triple H, DX, or we're talking
Triple H. Well, you stick with yours, and I'll stick with mine.
No, but that depends. Well, which one is yours? What era of DX are you going to choose?
It's Triple H. It's
when
it's
he's leader.
The invasion.
All right.
That group.
Okay. So if we're talking, I'll stick with NWO before it got way too large.
Okay.
So it's just those six members.
I'm sad you didn't go with the silver and black.
No way.
Bret Hart goes back. That wouldn't be
the Jeff Jarrett led one.
Jeff Jarrett.
No
yeah.
way. That might be the doldrums of NWO.
It was. It absolutely was.
So you take those six guys. So you have Hall and Nash, which would be pretty much like a year and a half removed or less than that, a year removed from them leaving WWF. So they go to NWO, start the hottest angle in all of wrestling, pick up a couple of cohorts in Hogan.
A couple of cohorts in Hogan.
Hogan, Six.
Yeah.
The Giant, and DiBiase, who's kind of their manager.
Yeah.
They go invade WWF. And it's kind of the inverse of what they were doing WCW when they started. It was like, oh, is this really a WWF invasion of WCW? Do the opposite of that, where they say, no, we are double agents. We're here to invade WWF all over again. Because we did everything we could. It's like Adam Mayhem, just make it up as I go on. Like, we already took over WCW. We're going to have our own awesome pay-per-view called Sold Out with a Giant Toilet.
Oh, please have Bischoff go over with them. Oh, come on.
No, this is before Nash powerbombed them. So they go back to WWF and say, we are in control. I know Bischoff said that, but someone else will say that.
Yeah.
Maybe X-Pac. They'll show up. At the time, NWO was the hottest thing in wrestling. Imagine if they showed up in WWF. WWF would have blown up. It would have been the hottest thing ever. Set up so Stone Cold could have taken on the NWO. Maybe not the foil that Mr. McMahon was, but still pretty darn good.
You're missing the story here. You're missing the story. What? It's so simple.
What?
They come back and say, we did what you wanted us to do. Now it's time to collect.
All right. Yeah, it kind of works
too. So Vince then has to worry about Austin and the NWO. He has to figure out how to get the NWO on his side because he can't afford what they're asking for.
All right, that's good too.
Because if Hogan's showing up, you know what he's asking for.
Creative control.
Exactly. Yep. Exactly. And Vince McMahon can't control that.
Nope.
So, that'd be good. But no, man, come on. Give me now, look, I understand that if it was Shawn Michaels going to WCW, that's totally a game changer. But I feel like DX got even hotter. Number one, there's two things. You're crazy if you think the best answer for the NWO isn't the Wolfpack NWO. I don't care what anybody says. The most popular version of the NWO was the Wolfpack NWO.
No, I know.
Conan, Nash, Sting.
Luger. Macho Man.
Macho Man. Not Rey Mysterio. He was not a member of Wolfpack NWO.
No.
You think about... DX was hot in 97 leading up to and then into 98. WrestleMania goes down. HBK retires. After that, Triple H takes over. And WWF gets so hot in the ratings, they start dominating every single week until Goldberg really hits his stride. And for like a couple weeks, WCW took it back over. But I feel like during that time when they were doing their invasion of WCW, riding around like fools on that tank, I think that would have been the time that it would have been so hot for DX to come in and run their own invasion angle. And they could have been like, this is an actual invasion angle. Your NWO invasion angle was a bunch of fake BS. We're here really to take control. And then Eric Bischoff, he would have just completely wasted their creative. He would have ended up joining them, turning them into a motorcycle gang who had like neon green and stuff. It would have been terrible. He would have had a giant toilet up on the stage.
Yeah, they're on pay-per-view.
Why did he have a giant toilet up on the
stage? Doesn't make any sense. Does he like toilets too or something? Like his passions, his hobbies are motorcycles and fixing toilets?
And then the Miss NWO, like, what did he think it was cool to have like average looking like women be in a beauty contest? Like an anti beauty contest? Did he think that was funny?
I don't know.
What was the point of that?
I don't know.
It was the nerdiest thing. It was like, this isn't funny, dude. And then a giant toilet?
Yeah, that was the throne for Miss NWO.
Like, what were they doing there, like riding on the backs of garbage trucks?
Yeah. Snowy streets, whatever city the show was in.
Do you not see the metaphor here, idiot?
I know.
You're riding garbage into the arena, and that's what...
I know.
Great question, though.
Yeah. Our final video question today from Ian from Tapped House TV. Let's see what Ian has to say.
Steve here, and Larson, and welcome to Going in Raw, the only pro wrestling you've got mail. Shit, I'm sorry. This is interesting. Cool, now can we get back to the podcast? I'm starving. Quality stuff right here. The pages
of the Going in Raw Patreon exclusive comic book, you get up that $20 a month mark. You can get your face on this show just like myself and get that comic book plus all the other cool perks. So my name is Ian. I'm here from Tapped House TV. You can follow us on YouTube if you're into tabletop gaming, Magic the Gathering, Dungeons, Dragons, all that kind of other nerdy stuff that I know some of you wrestling fans are all into. And I'm here with my very first Matt Chat question with my Adam Mayhem shirt. What's up, buddy? So, my question for you, Steven Larson, what is the single greatest wrestling show in all of WWE history? Are we talking 1992 Royal Rumble? Do you got a WrestleMania in mind? This is 25. We get HBK versus The Undertaker. I want to know your thoughts on what your favorite show is. An episode of Raw, episode of SmackDown, anything. What is it? Because for me, it's definitely the 92 Royal Rumble. Thanks, friendos.
Thank you, Ian.
Thank you, Ian, from Tapped House. And wow, I forgot to do the plugs at the beginning of the show, but we got a plug for the Friendo Care Package. An
excellent dramatic reading from the Going in Raw exclusive Patreon exclusive comic book.
I know, that was fantastic.
Fantastic.
Very good question. I'm going to go with, I already know what your answer is.
Yeah.
So my own personal favorite WWE event of all time is probably WrestleMania 18, because I feel like that in many ways was kind of like the true WCW, WWF crossover pay-per-view that we should have got way back in the day. Obviously, it had Rock Hogan, which I still think is the biggest match they ever put on. I know, you know, Hogan Andre can make that claim. A couple others might be able to make that claim, but to me, it's Rock Hogan. I feel like you had the biggest star from the Hogan Andre days, you know, arguably the biggest star, definitely these days the biggest crossover star in The Rock. You know, I'm not going to say at their primes. I don't know if Hogan ever actually had a prime. You know, the crowd was so hot. I had never seen a crowd like that before. And so that was a huge match. It was actually a pretty decent match. Hogan ended up putting over The Rock. That was great. You had a sing, yeah, for the undisputed WWF Championship. I mean, hard to follow up Rock Hogan, but yeah, Triple H versus Chris Jericho. That was probably good. You had, I mean, the Hardys on here. You had the Dudleys on there, APA on there, and a Four Corners elimination match for the tag team championships. Edge versus Booker T. That's a dream match scenario right there. Of course, you had, in the scenario we were just talking about, very enthusiastically, Stone Cold Steve Austin versus the NWO. Granted, wasn't really that great of a match, and, you know, Austin has since sort of, Austin was kind of a bit burnt out, and he didn't want to fight Hogan, which is apparently what they wanted to do. Or no, they wanted to do that like the next Mania. So, you know, but in the general sense, you get Austin versus NWO, you know. So it was Austin versus Scott Hall. Let's see here. What else we had? DDP versus Christian. Whatever. RVD versus William Regal. It's probably a good match. It was less than 7 minutes. So, I don't know. I think it's probably that. Which one had Ric Flair versus Undertaker? Was that 19?
Yeah, I think it might have been.
Maybe it was 19 that I like a lot.
19 is Lesnar Angle.
Yeah, that's generally regarded
17 as and 18 ones. Or 17 and 19 are generally regarded as the two best Manias, I think.
Yeah, you got Rock versus Hogan, Lesnar, Angle, Hogan versus McMahon, Triple H, Booker T, Shawn Michaels, Jericho. Wow, that's actually a really good card. Okay, yeah, so it's 19. Never mind.
All right, very well. No, the correct answer for greatest show in WWE history is Survivor Series 98, the Deadly Games Tournament.
It probably really is.
Yeah, in terms of 3 hours of storytelling, I would put that up there next to any Shakespearean piece you want to put on.
I agree, man.
It's got twists and turns and swerves and double swerves. A lot of great action. And the ending, when the Rock, apparently on the precipice of a massive face win, swerves everybody, turns heel again, aligns himself with the McMahons, wins that title in a finish reminiscent, hearkening to the Montreal screw job that happened just the year before, solidifies The Rock as a main event player and launched one of the better feuds, perhaps, of the Attitude Era, The Rock versus Mick Foley. To this day, I remember watching it live at the time in Earl's apartment, being in utter awe of the storytelling they were putting forth here. And to this day, it's still my favorite wrestling show of all time.
Yeah, it's hard. I'd be hard-pressed to find one single show that's better than that that tells a complete story from beginning to end. You're absolutely right. It is.
I am right. Happy we agree, Steve. Next question from a text question from James Page. He says, hey, friendos, imagine this scenario. Both Kenny Omega and Kazuchika Okada are free agents. However, Vince can only sign one as he has blown all of his money on the XFL. Who do you sign and why? I go first. I mean, it's the wrestling god. It's Okada.
He is a deity.
He is. You put him in the ring against anybody, he'll give you a 4.5-star match. Mm-hmm. It's a guarantee. It is a guarantee. So he is just a phenomenal match machine. He's got tons of charisma. He has, as we've seen recently in his feud with Tanahashi, he can play heel just as good as he can be a face. He's a completely well-rounded performer. He can do anything in that ring. He's young. He just turned 30. If you're going to invest a massive contract in somebody, do it. Invest it in Okada. He's got a lot of years left. Kenny Omega's 4 or 5 years older. He's taken a lot of nasty bumps in his career. Okada has too, but I don't know if it's to the same degree that Omega has. Omega is probably the more, I don't know, maybe it might be the more hyped of the two here in the States. Give me Okada.
Here's what you do.
Like pants Okada.
You got
Okada reborn.
Oh, so you want reborn.
Yeah.
You got to bring in Omega first, all right? And then wait like a couple of years when you build up your stash again, do another one of these greatest rumbles and get $20 more million, and then bring in Okada. You do Omega because Omega's the guy that everybody's talking about. Everybody always talks about. He's the number one guy. I guarantee the WWE would love to have him more than anybody else in the world. He's a 5-star match machine.
Best bout machine.
All the dream matches are there with Kenny Omega. Then what you do, you have Kenny Omega come in. He wins all the titles, right? And he says, there is no one that can beat me, because he talks weird like that. And then they bring in Okada. Here's the thing about Okada. Exactly, the Rainmaker. Here's the thing about Okada. He doesn't necessarily do anything flashy. He doesn't have one flashy move, you know?
He's got a really good drop kick.
Yeah, he has a fantastic drop kick. A lot of people do. For Okada, you have to watch him. You have to watch his whole story play out. If you don't know of his legacy, if you don't know where he's coming from, what he's done, and they can try to explain it, but if you haven't experienced it, I could see the audiences not immediately taking to him, and you need something big to build him up.
You know how audiences will take to him immediately? Okada dollars. That's dropping Okada dollars everywhere.
That's a very good first step. If he does this, and then, but
Okada dollars.
The problem with Okada dollars is that they're worth jack shit.
Well, they're not legal currency. They're
correct.
Not legal tender.
That is correct.
That's not the point of them.
Yeah.
The point is the character portraying the character. The Rainmaker.
Yeah.
You know?
Right.
You got to carry that through to WWE. It's a great visual image.
It's like a party gimmick, though.
No. No.
It's a party gimmick.
No.
Yeah.
No.
It's not real dollars.
I understand.
If it's not real dollars, then it's a party gimmick.
No, that's not true at all.
Going like this and then having fake money rain down is basically a party gimmick.
No, it's not.
Not like an Adam Rose gimmick.
Yeah,
I'm saying it's like it's a gimmick. It's just a silly thing.
Oh, it's a gimmick, yeah, but it's not a party gimmick.
It's a silly thing.
No, it's not, because it's so tied to his character.
It's so silly.
But it's awesome.
Okay, but it could be silly and awesome at the same time.
Yeah, I don't know.
And it is very silly.
But it is awesome, too.
Yeah. But it's more silly.
But he walks out on an episode of The Raw after Mania wearing that awesome robe and those pants that look exactly like his robe. And he just comes out and he looks like all the money in the world. You're going to look at that guy and go, holy shit. Just looking at him, he's impressive.
But here's what you
like
have to do. This
he
is the way
like
that it would work, is if Omega's already there.
You don't need Omega there. AJ's there.
Yeah, okay, all right. If AJ's there, okay, all right.
You see what I'm saying? I understand
you
your point.
Need an anchor point. You need an anchor point to bring him in so that the audience who aren't familiar with him can then understand through the anchor point.
I understand that to a degree, but I don't think they would reference much of his career in Japan.
It would be folly if they didn't.
No, I understand.
Given that his legacy is being a wrestling god in Japan, unlike anyone else, they would need to hype that up.
Well, they should.
Big time. I mean, if they want to pull it off, you know, what they'd probably do is stick him in NXT, have him fighting these like 300 rinky-dink arenas or venues, rather, you know, little mom pop shop, little high school gymnasiums for 2 years, you know,
and then bring him up and then do something the complete opposite we did in NXT.
Job him out to
yeah. First feud, Dolph Ziggler.
Job him out to Chris Dijak.
Yeah.
You know. Oh man. Anyways, that's it for Matt Chat. Thanks so much for tuning in. And until next time, you guys can be a Matt Chatter too. $20 on the Patreon.
It's all it takes.
Cash money. Until next time, we'll talk to you guys later.
Goodbye.